There is great comfort in knowing that God is bigger and greater than any of our problems. Here's Nancy DeMoss Wolgemuth.
Do you think that my little problem could escape his notice, that he doesn't know how to solve the little itsy-bitsy issues in my life? We say they're not itsy-bitsy issues in my life, they're big issues. Well, it depends on your perspective. Are you looking at it from your perspective or from God's?
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Wolgemuth, co-author of Seeking Him. For May 19th, 2022, I'm Dana Gresh. Have you ever been just going about your routine and suddenly you're struck by how big nature is? A mountain, the ocean, or a sky full of stars can suddenly make you stop and just stare in awe. Well, those things are nothing compared to God. Nancy will help you catch a glimpse of God's greatness, continuing in the series, Behold Your God. She recorded this at a time when Revive Our Hearts was facing some big challenges, but not bigger than God. Here's Nancy.
We've been looking at Isaiah chapter 40, and I've shared with you that God has been using this chapter in a very encouraging way in my own heart in recent weeks. And let me say, by the way, when I talk about pressures or problems or things that are going into my life or in our ministry, I don't want you to get the wrong idea. It's not all falling apart. I think being women, we sometimes assume things are falling apart when it just feels that way to us at the moment. But the point of this chapter is things aren't falling apart if we can see it from God's perspective, and if we can behold our God in the midst of our circumstances look so different. So I don't want you to write letters or worry, is Revive Our Hearts going off the air? Is there something you should be worried about? We have, as every ministry does, organizational challenges, and I have in my life, as you do, challenges and pressures and problems, and I'm just saying God is so good in the midst of those to bring passages to us like Isaiah chapter 40. It's been an encouragement to me, and I can tell that it is to many of you as well. Now, as we come to verse 12 in Isaiah 40, the prophet asks a series of rhetorical questions, and his purpose, his objective, is to help people see the greatness of God. Yes, the Assyrians are on the march. Yes, the Babylonians are coming. Yes, there are going to be 70 years of captivity. But God is bigger and greater than all of that. God is bigger and greater than every enemy, every foe, every circumstance, everything that threatens your world this day. And he uses some fabulous word pictures here to help the Israelites and to help us realize how big is our God. Verse 12, who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand and marked off the heavens with a span, enclosed the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance? What is Isaiah saying? God is the creator, and as the creator, he is infinitely bigger than his creation. What is huge to us is small to him. The problems that we think loom so great, they're nothing to the God who created this whole universe. Look, for example, he has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand. I've been on Google this week doing a little bit of internet research about some of these figures, some of these pictures in Isaiah chapter 40, and I wanted to find out how many gallons of water are on the face of the earth. Now, for obvious reasons, nobody really knows the answer to that question, but one number I came up with was 340 quintillion gallons of water on the face of the earth. That's 34 with 19 zeros. And God holds all those gallons of water in the hollow of his hand. One hand, God can hold all that water. It's a pretty big God, isn't he? He marked off the heavens with a span. What is a span? It's the width of a hand. Now, how big are the heavens? How big is the universe? Well, one figure I read said the universe is 30 billion light years across. Or if it's easier for you to think of it this way, 600 sextillion miles. I don't even know how many zeros that is. And God measures it all with one span of his hand. That's a pretty big hand. Now, let me ask you, if God can hold all the oceans, 340 quintillion gallons of water in the palm of his hand, do you think he can handle your problem? You think he can handle my problem? If God can measure the span of the universe with the span of his hand, do you think his hand is big enough to take care of your issue and mine? It says he puts the dust of the earth in a measure. I've got a little measuring cup here. You could fill this measuring cup up with dirt. How many times do you think you'd have to fill it up to get all the dirt on the earth? But God has a measuring cup, so to speak, that can take all the dust, all the dirt of the earth, and put it in one of his measures. That's how big God is. He's weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance. My little bit of internet research told me that the earth weighs 6 sextillion metric tons. That would be 21 zeros. And that earth hangs in empty space. God weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance. I think of that song we sometimes sing with children, "My God is so big, so strong, and so mighty. There's nothing my God cannot do." That's the point. God is so big, so strong, so mighty. There's nothing he cannot do. And then we come to verse 13 and we see the omniscience of God. The fact that he knows everything. Not only is he strong and powerful, but he knows everything. The incredible wisdom and knowledge of God is what is in view here. Verse 13, "Who has measured the Spirit of the Lord? Or what man shows him his counsel? Whom did he consult and who made him understand? Who taught him the path of justice and taught him knowledge and showed him the way of understanding?" The answer is, nobody has ever taught God anything. God never said, "Oops, I didn't think about that. I forgot about that." No one ever explained anything to God. I've had to have people explain a lot of things to me. But nobody has to explain anything to God. God doesn't need any advisors. He doesn't need a cabinet to brief him. He doesn't need personal assistance. He doesn't need help. He is eternally self-sufficient. The infinite wisdom of God. There's never been a question that he did not know the answer to. I think of that verse in Romans chapter 11, verse 33. "Oh, the depth of the riches and the wisdom and the knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and how inscrutable his ways." He's so wise. He knows everything. Do you think that my little problem could escape his notice? That he doesn't know how to solve the little itsy bitsy issues in my life? We say they're not itsy bitsy issues in my life. They're big issues. Well, it depends on your perspective. Are you looking at it from your perspective or from God's? See, God is so great, so big. If you'll behold your God, then you'll see that the issues in your life really are itsy-bitsy at their most. God doesn't need our advice. We need his. So as we behold our God, he makes his advice available to us. Now in verses 15 through 17, Isaiah points out another comparison. He's comparing now the nations of the world to God. These world powers seem so great. Nations like Assyria, Babylon, Persia. And you could think of nations in our world today that we think of as being great nations. Nations with great military prowess. Nations that are developing certain kinds of nuclear weapons. And we read about this and we say, they could blow up the whole world. Some of these little tiny nations that seem to have so much power. And those nations can seem so powerful. But Isaiah says, "Behold, the nations are like a drop in a bucket." Now you think of taking a drop of water and putting it into a bucket. What difference does it make? Nothing. It's insignificant. The nations are like a drop in a bucket. They are accounted as the dust on the scales. I've got a scale here. It's a little kitchen scale. And I just imagine, you know, that scale getting dusty, just putting a little dust in there, what does it do to the scale? It doesn't make any difference. It's weightless in effect. It's insignificant. And Isaiah is saying all these nations that seem so great, they seem so powerful, they're like a drop in the bucket. They're like just your scales getting dusty. Doesn't make a difference. "Behold, God takes up the coastlands like fine dust. Lebanon would not suffice for fuel, nor are its beasts enough for a burnt offering. All the nations are as nothing before him. They are counted by him as less than nothing and emptiness." How much is less than nothing? I mean, we can't even picture that, can we? Nothing is the least we can think of. But God says all those great, powerful nations, those forces in our world, in God's accounting, they are as less than nothing in emptiness. They are utterly insignificant compared to God. Now, compared to us, those nations, those powers, those people in your life may seem to be very powerful. They may seem to be very great. And if we look at the nations, if we look at the powers, if we look at evil in our world, we'll be fearful. We'll be terrified. But we're looking at the wrong place. That's why we need to behold our God. You say, well, I'm not worried about the nations. I'm worried about my boss. It's my husband. It's my ex-husband. It's this person in my life who's so difficult. A drop in the bucket. Dust on the scales. Accounted as less than nothing in emptiness. Now, that doesn't mean they don't matter to God, but what it means is that compared to God, they are all utterly insignificant. So again, we come back to the message of this chapter. Behold your God. Verse 18, to whom then will you liken God, or what likeness compare with him? An idol. A craftsman casts it, and a goldsmith overlays it with gold and casts for it silver chains. He who is too impoverished for an offering chooses wood that will not rot. He seeks out a skillful craftsman to set up an idol that will not move. Now let's stop there and just unpack that for a little bit. To whom will you liken God? Or what likeness compare with him? What's the point here? There is no comparison between God and anyone or anything else. Isn't it true that the tendency of our hearts is to construct idols, images, likenesses of God? Things we think can satisfy and help us, though they can't? John Calvin said, the heart is an idol factory. Our hearts are always manufacturing substitutes for God, things we think can take God's place in our lives. And so Isaiah is saying pagan idols are nothing compared to God. We've already seen that the nations are nothing compared to God, that the created universe is nothing compared to God. And now we see that pagan idols are nothing compared to God. And so Isaiah points out the folly, the foolishness of worshiping anything or anyone other than God. The idols that Isaiah describes in this passage are man-made. People make them out of wood or gold. They're man-made. And Isaiah is saying, compare those man-made idols to God, who is the creator of everything. God was not made by anyone. And how foolish is it to worship something that is created rather than worshiping the creator? Now, those idols, as Isaiah describes them, they may be ornate. Some have expensive idols. They overlay it with gold and with silver chains. But they're nothing compared to God. And we tend to place great value on certain things that mean a lot to us. Everything you have is man-made. It's human. It's flawed. It's limited. It's weak. It's foolish to worship any of those things or people who are less than God. God says, worship me. Worship me alone. Have no other gods before me. God is God. And in fact, Isaiah points out that these idols that we make, he says, they are powerless. They cannot move. They cannot act. Why put your hope in something? Why put your trust in something that's powerless? It cannot move. When you have a God of the universe who wants to be your God, he is your God, and he is powerful to act on your behalf. Now, verse 21, Isaiah says, do you not know? Do you not hear? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? He points us back to the creation, back to the beginning, and he says, creation declares the existence of God, the greatness of God, the glory of God. It bears witness to every human being. Think back. Where did all this come from? Verse 22, it is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them like a tent to dwell in. God sits above the circle or the horizon of the earth. I think about last week when I had to take a trip in an airplane and we were landing at night. And as we were coming in, you could see the lights of the city below us. And everything looked so tiny as we had our position up above the earth. We weren't very high up, but everything looked so tiny. Tiny houses, tiny cars, tiny lights, tiny people. You get a different perspective if you get up above, don't you? That's where God is, not just 14,000 feet above the earth, but infinitely above. He sits above the horizon, the circle of the earth. What we need to do is take our position with Christ, seated at God's right hand, and get God's perspective on life here on this planet. All these things that seem so huge to us, they're nothing to God. You see in this verse that the inhabitants of the earth are described as grasshoppers. They're tiny. They're puny. They're little. And there are several words used in this chapter to describe man, kings, earthly powers. What are the words used to describe all human beings? Verse 7 told us that we're like grass. Verse 15 said the kings of the earth are like a drop in the bucket, dust on the scales, less than nothing and emptiness, grasshoppers. And then verse 24, we'll see they're referred to as stubble. I mean, just really insignificant. Verse 23, who brings princes to nothing and makes the rulers of the earth as emptiness. Scarcely are they planted, scarcely sown. Scarcely has their stem taken root in the earth when he blows on them, and they wither, and the tempest carries them off like stubble. Now keep in mind that the Israelites in the day when Isaiah was proclaiming this were living in fear, in dread of a very mighty world power, the Assyrians. And there was another mighty world power coming after them, the Babylonians. And then the Medes and the Persians after them, Greeks, the Romans. There have been so many world empires and powers. And Isaiah is saying, next to God, King Sennacherib, King Nebuchadnezzar, all these mighty potentates and powers and rulers of the world, they are nothing. They're like seed thrown on the ground. It doesn't even have time to take root. It just blows away. It's gone. The Assyrians, the Babylonians, they're nothing but instruments in God's hands to accomplish God's purposes. God's kingdom will be fulfilled. His reign and rule will come about on this earth. And all these kings, evil and good combined, they are just instruments in God's hands. It's God who establishes and removes the rulers of the earth. Whether they're rulers of nations, rulers of corporations, it may be your boss. You say, my boss is a wicked person. Why does God allow him to stay there? You say, he's not blowing away. He's been there 30 years, and he's not thinking of retiring. Seems like a long time this cruel or vindictive boss or leader of this corporation is there. But the scripture says God establishes rulers, and God removes them. And it may seem like a long time that they're in power over nations, over corporations, over churches, over homes. Listen, I get letters, heartbreaking letters, from women who are living in desperately painful, difficult marriages. To men who do not know Christ. And by the way, we get a few letters from men also who listen to our program and write about desperately difficult situations with wives who don't know or love the Lord. But I think about the women in particular living with cruel or mean, difficult husbands. And there are some circumstances when the wise and biblical thing to do would be to have a separation. But I think of women living with this intimidation of a powerful man who is not a godly man. And we need to step back and remember that it's God who establishes and removes kings of the world. And God can remove that authority. God can remove that power when it is his time to do that. I'm not saying that in the meantime there aren't steps you should take to deal with the situation, but don't lose sight of the fact that God is greater than that human power, that God is sovereign over all kings, all rulers, and all powers. They all exist to fulfill his purposes. And his kingdom rules over all. All kings and rulers on this earth are term limited. And God decides the term. God says, you've ruled long enough. No more. You're out of here. God is the ruler. God is the king. And God is fulfilling his purposes in this world in spite of any rulers or kings and using them as his instruments to bring about his purposes and his kingdom in this world. So what? So you don't need to be afraid. So you don't need to be intimidated. So you don't need to be terrorized or live in dread. Lift your eyes up, behold your God, and know that there is none like Him in heaven or on earth.
The vastness of the God who created everything will put your problems into perspective. At Revive Our Hearts, we know that God can do amazing things in spite of our cautions and fears. When we hosted our first National Women's Conference, we felt like we were taking a risk, but we watched God work. Nancy's here to tell that story.
When Revive Our Hearts made plans for the first True Woman Conference in Chicago, we could never have envisioned all that God had in store. We planned this as our first national conference, but it turned into an international conference as women came from around the world. Thousands of the women who participated in that first True Woman Conference took the biblical truth that they learned and began to apply it in their homes, their churches, and their workplaces. It proved to be the beginning of what we have come to call the True Woman Movement.
We recently heard from a woman named Cynthia about that first True Woman Conference back in 2008. Not only did it impact her life, but it also made a difference in her daughters.
In the winter of 2009, I gathered in a living room with some women to listen to the True Women 2008 conference. I knew that day that I had found my people with Revive Our Hearts. I'm the mother of four daughters, and each of us have been encouraged and strengthened in our walk with God through the ministry. It was not uncommon around our house to hear the statement, "I wonder if Nancy Lee or the other True Women have addressed this subject." Thank you for helping me in the task of raising godly women who are behaving counterculturally. Two of my girls are now raising the next generation of True Women. It's my dream to someday attend the True Women Conference with my daughters. If you see us, we'll be those five beaming, misty-eyed women, thrilled to be with those who have aided us so much in our Christian journey. The words thank you cannot fully express my gratitude. May God continue to shine through you in this work. Thank you.
What a sweet message from Cynthia. You know, our next True Woman Conference is coming up this September. The theme is Heaven Rules, and you can find out all the details and register at our website.
You know, Cynthia and her daughters, and now granddaughters, are being changed because of God working through friends like you. As a listener-supported ministry, Revive Our Hearts relies on God's provision through His people so we can continue sharing the truth and the love and the grace of Christ with women all over the world.
Yeah, and right now we're approaching the end of our ministry year, which means we're wrapping up our budget on May 31st. We're asking the Lord to provide $775,000 this month so we can continue impacting the lives of women and expand our reach in the months ahead.
So if you've not already done so, would you help us end this month and this fiscal year in a strong financial position as we move forward into a fruitful year of ministry ahead? When you make a gift of any amount to Revive Our Hearts, you'll become a significant part of someone else's story as they experience more of what it means to thrive in Christ. You can make your gift at our website, reviveourhearts.com, or give us a call at 1-800-569-5959. Again, that's 1-800-569-5959. Thank you so much for the encouragement of your support at this important time.
And when you donate, we'd like to send you a special resource to say thanks for your support. It's called Unremarkable, 10 Ordinary Women Who Impacted Their World for Christ. This small book is full of inspiring stories of women who made a difference through their unshakable faith and obedience. Just ask for your copy when you give online or over the phone. Are you a practical atheist? Nancy's going to ask that question tomorrow. Find out what it means on the next Revive Our Hearts. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy DeMoss-Wolgemuth, equipping you to live in freedom, fullness, and fruitfulness in Christ.